to another episode of the Horizon Roundtable. I am Bob McDonald, and joining me instead of Matt Dudek, who you normally can find on Twitter at Horizon Matt, is John Parker.
Two in a row, let's do it.
And just as easy as Matt's Twitter handle, John's is Horizon Matt. Horizon John. He's Horizon John, Matt's Horizon Matt. See, Horizon John on Twitter. You can find us on the web at horizonroundtable.com. You can go to horizonroundtable.com/subscribe. That is where you can find links to our social sites and links to where you can find us, where podcasts are available. And become a patron, patreon.com/horizonroundtable. That's going to be pretty beneficial for you come the off season, starting in June. But last episode, John, we had a discussion about Jared Calhoun going to Utah State, and it was projected, it was speculated, us and many other people, that Ethan Faulkner, his longtime, his associate head coach since his associate head coach and has been at Youngstown State for a few years now, would be elevated to the head coaching job. And literally a day, I'm glad they we recorded on set. We got like what, 36 hours of speculating and between recording, speculating, and then the reality of him getting promoted happening. So
I think it was like kind of reports came out, but the school hadn't announced it. Like
that is correct.
A few hours after we published.
Just a couple. So it's like, oh, man, no, not yet. Announced it on Monday. And they did announce it on Monday. They officially announced it on Monday that Ethan Faulkner was going to be the head guy at Youngstown State from here on out. So that is exactly what happened.
And I mean,
and I know you're sad because you wanted drama.
The thing I'll say about that, I will, you know, you've been with them for Calhoun's whole tenure. He was the associate for the last 2 years. I get elevating the associate when you're having uncharacteristic success like that. And I'll never say it's a bad move. I'll just say with the way that, you know, Calhoun and YSU have operated, especially the last 2 years, the two that ultimately got him the Utah State job and got Faulkner the YSU job, you're going to need him to be Dennis Gates day one, because there's
a bear cover. He would have to be Daniel Robinson, because Daniel Robinson replaced Dennis Gates. And
but Daniel Robinson so had to be a Daniel little bit Robinson, less in basically. The cupboard.
Yeah. So that's not entirely true, though. As of right now, and obviously things can change while we're recording this or after we record this. Right now, the remaining player, they don't have a lot of players. One of them is E.J. Farmer. E.J. Farmer is coming back, it looks like. Zorgval and Dines, especially Dines, big key piece there. As far as we know, they're sticking around. Some of the other guys who didn't play last year, Kirkland, who's a fresh for the red shirt, and then I think David Wilkerson, who he actually was out injured, because I think I saw some pictures of him rehabbing on IG stories the other day. So he didn't get a chance to play last year, and he was actually supposed to come in and be a part of that, you know, that backcourt rotation last season, didn't get an opportunity to, but they have him coming back this season. As far as I know, all of those guys are coming back. So at least you have that going for them.
So maybe Robinson is an appropriate one, because you've got some key pieces off of. But
that's about if the amount of players coming back for Youngstown State next year is similar to the amount of players that are coming back for Cleveland State when Daniel Robinson came in, basically. So yes, that's a fair comparison.
But nobody over 20 minutes a game.
No.
That's a lot to lose.
Yeah, there's no Spider Johnson in there. But again, you saw a lot more Gabe Dines down the stretch, though.
Fair.
You did do that. You did do that.
Yeah, Milwaukee did.
EJ Farmer was fighting. EJ Farmer was fighting for minutes with that entire crew. So that entire backcourt, which is stacked with talent. So that doesn't entirely surprise me. He did not get as much playing time last season, given the just given the depth of that backcourt at that moment. Yeah. So theoretically, but to your point, because when Daniel Robinson took over, as far as experience was concerned, he still had Spider Johnson and Deshaun Parker. Mm-hmm. You know, two guys who were starters, prominent members of that team, prominent parts of their key parts of their success. They came back and they were real kind of the core that Robinson was able to build around. I'm not saying that Faulkner can't build around Dines and Farmer, because he absolutely can. He most certainly can. It just seems like he's going to have more work to do moving forward. And again, we don't know what we're going to get with, say, we don't know exactly what we're going to get with Wilkerson, because we didn't see him last year, or Kirkland, who was a redshirt last season. We may see something a lot more out of them than we expect to. So there is that
part. That is definitely fair. Yeah. I
feel like I'm missing somebody out of their team, existing person out of their team, and I'm sorry if I did miss you guys. Sorry.
Not unless Bates has more, but I don't think so.
So my understanding, I don't know, because Bates theoretically could redshirt with a medical redshirt, because he was out with an injury last season. I'm not sure about him. It doesn't seem like we're going to see him next year. It doesn't. But to your point, the process for Calhoun was always get these guys. I mean, get old immediately. So bringing in some of these grad transfers, because you brought in. Because you get these guys like Brett Thompson and you know Ziggy Reed and maybe some of the guys that you get a couple of years for, like a Dwayne Cohill or a Brandon Rush or something like that. Now the question then becomes: Will that effectively translate in the Faulkner era? And that's a good question.
We talked a little bit last week about how. There was some question about where the guy who kind of did all the, you know, crunched the numbers and said, okay, go for these guys, was going to go. And I haven't been able to see anything about what's going to happen with.
The answer is, as of right now, no. As my understanding is, not yet, keyword. So, It's possible that Faulkner may have to go to another analytics guy, because it seems to me at the very least Faulkner is definitely of that mindset. So also too, I mean, I guess we should probably be looking out, looking at whoever at Northern Kentucky hits the transfer portal.
You mean for?
Yeah.
For inbound. Oh. I was like, oh, you mean because
I knew you were going to get there at a certain point.
Oh, gosh. All right. So, they've got Marquez Morris in the bag. That's pretty good. That's a great start.
Yeah. I'm going to say
that. Oh, my gosh. Okay. But NK, you would riot if it did.
Yeah. That's true. But that's not.
No, probably not.
Let us return to planet Earth, shall we? Speaking of Northern Kentucky, there was a story in the Tribune Chronicle from Neil Madivan, from Ethan Faulkner's coach at NKU, Dave Beasel, the guy who came in. He was the coach who kind of facilitated the transition to D1, and then. Mm-hmm. For some reason, NKU decided to move on to John Brannon, and then obviously we're now currently in the Darren Horn era. But it was a very nice article, so that was good. Getting some insight as to Faulkner the player transitioning to Faulkner the coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Good news is, though, yeah. So I do think, as I mentioned, I do think that Faulkner will continue looking at players analytically. Will he be able to use the same analytics guy? Maybe, maybe not. Depends. Might have to get a new guy out there. There's like a bunch of them, a bunch of those guys. I feel like I missed my calling, John. could have did analytics and stuff like that, but that would have required like statistics or some complex math I did really crappy at in school, college. So maybe that wouldn't have worked out so well. But I do think that that'll be something that happens at Youngstown State. Something that started at Youngstown State with Calhoun and will continue forward with Faulkner. And I think, again, just based on the relationships that Faulkner clearly has with the current the folks who are still there.
Yeah,
it is. I think he's definitely has a foundation to grow on. Definitely. Yeah. With specifically with EJ Farmer in the backcourt and Gabe Dines up front. Does he have holes? Of course he does. But will he be able to fill them? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. I'll say one of the last times that I wasn't quite sure if a team was going to be able to carry over their success from a really, really successful coach to the guy after him. The guy after him is now an executive with the Boston Celtics. So I've been very, very, very wrong before.
Yes, Todd Licklider to Brad Stevens. Yes.
Who knows how it's going to go? It's a big gamble to do that.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, it certainly, at the very least, I mean, that would be quite a story if Ethan Faulkner one day ended up at the front office of some NBA team. Lord knows a few of them could use
the connections there.
I know. They really are. That's true.
The Celtics connection is there. Missoula.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. So many. Yeah, that's not. I don't know if that's a coincidence or not.
But no.
All right. So, John, the day has arrived that we thought would never arrive. Detroit Mercy finally has a head coach.
Yeah.
And it's Mark Montgomery, who, let's be honest, like, that's a guy that you think of that a guy they could have immediately brought in and said, yeah, you know, they probably could have hired him 3 weeks ago.
I think they got
really, they could have.
I think they definitely got shot down just based on the timing of the hire, where right after some of the other coaches that had been linked to them became available, they then go with, I don't know, I always thought this was probably the most fascinating the most fascinating coaching search of the offseason, because you're talking about a school where, okay, the coach before the one who just left was a Michigan assistant who lasted 2 years. The AD who hired him is still there. Going to be weird to go back to the Michigan well.
Which is why we didn't see Saudi Washington.
Michigan State's whole staff is all guys who pretty recently been head coaches and got fired. And so it's, you know, do you go the D2 route? There had been some rumors about hiring Grand Valley State's coach, but they haven't.
Cordell Mann.
Yeah. Despite having the resources, they haven't been making tournaments. So I think that would have been an insane hire. Do you go with an outside guy, which seemed to be the way that they might be leaning? And then all of a sudden, you know, J.R. Blount and
DeAndre Haynes.
yeah, DeAndre Haynes, thank you. Both become available.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, Mark Montgomery is the hire a week and a half after Michigan State was out of the tournament.
Yes.
It strikes me that they probably got shut down. They did end up deciding to go with a retread, and I almost worry, like, my thing with Montgomery, what he's shown so far is that he is good enough that he will be able to pretty quickly get them out of what they were this year.
I mean,
I don't, he hasn't,
whoever they hired was good. I mean, there was nowhere to go but up. I mean, really. Right,
exactly. I mean, and that's the thing.
Let's be honest. They were 1-31 last season. There was nowhere to, they were 1-31 last season. They couldn't keep anybody healthy to save their lives. They had the eligibility issue and the visa issue, apparently, with Alex Chikoo. I mean, it was a comedy of errors the entire season. And there was no, I said this multiple times over the course of the last season, over the course of this season, there is no reason why Detroit Mercy should have been 1-31, because there were multiple games during the course of the season where they were in a position to win and they just didn't. And
they could have been 2-30 with a win over Ole Miss. They were so
close. Exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, but that's the whole
over
thing.
One of the best teams on their schedule.
It didn't make it, it never made any sense to me that Detroit Mercy was 1-31. It never did. But yeah. I will be honest though, because they were really on a track to make history in the wrong way. As you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, that type of gruesomeness. So I was actually rooting that on.
Nothing
against anybody on the team or anything else. It's just, it's there. It's like watching a train wreck and you can't look away. And that's what I did. It's like watching, yeah, I think I've mentioned this a couple of times during the season. It's like watching any Real Housewives show. It's a train wreck, but everybody and their grandmother can't stop watching it because of the just dysfunctional, you can't really put your fingers on a thing. And so, that, sadly, that's where I was the whole entire season. So that kind of skewed me towards be bad. Yes, be bad. Be bad enough to be record-breaking bad. Now, sadly, they were only record-tying bad. They just missed it because IUPUI was somehow worse.
Oh.
But I guess they did have kind of a meeting, kind of workout some sort. Earlier, about a day or two after the Montgomery was hired, and apparently a whole bunch of guys showed up.
Okay.
So, yeah, well, one of the things I do find fascinating about the Detroit Mercy team is that there's only three guys actually in the portal: Ryan Hurst, Marcus Tankersley, and Jaden Stone. Those three guys are in the portal. Everybody else, as far as I know, is going to actually be there. So
unless they get
and Tony Paul actually had a photo of the guys who were in practice. Well, first of all, Manuel Quach was there. I know my understanding is he has another year of eligibility. So apparently he's going to be back next year. Alex Chikoo was there. There's a possibility we may actually see Alex Chikoo next year. Seriously, I thought we were never going to see him ever. And we may actually see him next year. So I'm holding out for that. They had like nine or so guys with Monty during that. And it's interesting because obviously the Detroit Mercy has a ton of walk-ons. I'm not even sure who's not a walk. Who is a walk? I know who are walk-ons. Tobin Schwaneke is absolutely a walk-on. I don't know if I saw Jamail Pink. I thought I did see him there. But, you know, guys like Mac Mansell, he was there. There were a few faces that I think Trenton Johnson was there, it looked like, but I think he was, because I think he's still rehabbing his injury, so I don't think he could go, like, full bore yet. But, yeah, although there was, like, a – they have more. I mean, if we're being honest, they have more. They have more guys available next year than Youngstown State does.
I mean, they.
Oh, Tyree Davis was there too. I did see him, and Michael Oakes. Michael Oakes was there.
Interesting. No, and you wonder if it's going to be kind of one of those like obviously after Sonny Wicks took the Green Bay job. There were quite a few guys who kind of got the memo to leave. So it's going to be interesting if it's one of those situations where it's like, hey, let's see what we got. I don't know. I hope not. I hate that crap.
What I find interesting, though, is that it isn't exactly that because guys were before Sonny, every guys were going into the portal no matter what. This is the, and we saw this again with IUPUI. Where nearly everybody except for Dalen Hamilton, where are you, man? Shouldn't you be in the portal too with everybody else? Or are you actually staying? What are you doing, man? Tell us your future. They all are in the portal. But that's not what happened here at Detroit Mercy. And I that is kind of a – I find that very interesting that that indeed is the case. And again, they had – guys who could perform. The problem was is that they just couldn't get it together on a consistent basis. So if Monty can come in and actually, you know, get more out of a Mac Mansell, if he can actually get Alex Chiku on the floor, if he can get if Emmanuel Quatch is, I don't know if he's ever going to be 100%, but closer to 100% than he was at all this season. This is not a 1-31 team, that's for sure. And,
yeah, no, I definitely got the impression that Davis was a little checked out at times. There were times where it was a 2-point game with minutes to go, and he's fishing for a technical, which I know he had occasionally done. But man, you're like 0-17. Don't be trying to commit suicide on the game. Don't be trying to forfeit.
Come on, what are you guys doing here? yeah. One of the other wrinkles here is that we did in this and going back to the Daniel Robinson transition. Remember, Daniel Robinson was able to convince one of the guys he coached at Iowa State to transfer over to Cleveland State. I mean, that guy ended up being Tristan and Aruna. Now, when you look at Michigan State, there's a couple of guys I could say, no, that's probably a guy we probably need to see. I would not be surprised if one of the guy, a Michigan State guy, a Michigan State player transferred into this roster. I would not be surprised at all. It would make all the sense in the world. And honestly, Detroit Mercy needs the help.
Yeah, no,
they do. It's true.
That is definitely one of the, you know, one of the things when it comes to, you know, hiring an assistant that you in the portal era that you kind of hope for.
Uh-huh.
It will definitely be interesting to see if they're able to get that. I know people were listing Sissoko. I feel like I was one of them.
I would love to see Sissoko on this team. I could see him going to Detroit Mercy. That would be a huge get for them too, by the way. They have to figure out a bunch of stuff up front, but hey.
I don't know that I don't know. Doesn't feel like it.
Don't throw cold water on my dream, damn it.
I mean, typically when you've got like a bigger guy, I mean, maybe, but.
And knowing what the Horizon League is, he'd be pretty well suited to dominate a little bit.
Oh, yeah, no, he'd be.
And again, that's a guy that Detroit Mercy needs. Seems like, I don't know, I'm sure Detroit Mercy fans are holding out hope that Tankersley and Stone come back. I'm not as confident about that.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not confident about Stone, that's for sure. It would be amazing if they did, because they absolutely need those two guys. But I think the big thing for Detroit Mercy, as it has been, it was for nearly the whole of the Mike Davis era, is you got to get guys, first of all, make sure that they're all able to play on the first game of starting in the first game of the season, and then the health. I mean, I guess that's not anything you can really help, honestly.
Yeah.
Cross your fingers, maybe, you know, do some sort of like ritual to like cleanse Callahan Hall of the bad spirits or something. I don't know. I will say this too, because as we know, Montgomery was on Davis's bench for like 5 minutes during the COVID year 2021, right after his ouster from Northern Illinois.
Right.
And I don't know if you noticed this, but they seem to do a little. The Detroit Mercy seem to be doing better with him sitting next to Davis than when without him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was also a complete coincidence that Noah Waterman kind of came out of nowhere. But still, these are important things. So that was the only winning season that he had. I mean, yes, they were 12-10, but still, it's above 500.
Yeah, I mean,
we chalk that up as a winning season.
No, definitely. I mean, that was obviously, yeah, a very weird situation. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
There's a lot of unknowns on that Detroit Mercy squad. But funny thing said, is,
one thing that is kind of a known
I'm sorry, go ahead.
He was coaching for a decade, so we kind of have an idea.
Yeah.
And it just ended a few years ago, so it feels like it's probably unlikely that there's some, you know, sage advice he was given in the last, you know, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
He
was on Izzo's bench since 21, so you never know.
I will say this too.
That's right. So I will say this too. There's also one other thing that the next season's Detroit Mercy squad has that, you know, years past have not have, and that's a little bit of roster stability. Because unless something drastic happens in the next couple of weeks, until the portal window closes, they are going to have a decent group of players, which, if the last couple of years at Detroit Mercy has been any indication, has never been the case. We've all even like getting guys in like in what, August? I'm like, hey, surprise, here's these guys. The level of surprise we will get from, it seems like, and this is a good thing, that the level of surprise we'll get from a Detroit Mercy roster additions will be minimized. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, given that I'm the one doing the transfer tracker. Like, oh, I can close this out. Oh, Detroit Mercy added 5 people. The guy they said was going to be here isn't going to be here. Oh, I got to delete that. Yeah.
My thing with the Montgomery hire, though, where it gets a little bit, I mean, like I mentioned, he was just a head coach a few years ago. The one thing I'll say about it is Northern Illinois is probably the worst job in the MAC. They're just never good. So with that said, I mean, you're talking about a guy who wins about 40% of his games in over a decade as a head coach. The transition period and the early part of it does play a role, but he'd still be under 500 in league or in conference and overall if you take those first two seasons out. I don't know. I feel like it is a hire where what happened at Northern Illinois could happen at Detroit Mercy, where you go from a catastrophically bad situation to significantly better. You're still not particularly good, but you're a lot better. And then he's there for a decade.
And And for the for the Horizon League, we need significant. We need Detroit Mercy to be significantly better. But just like we need IUPUI to be significantly better. Will this happen? Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, Detroit Mercy, I think, will go back to being, you know, what they were under Davis before this year. I think that's pretty reasonable. I don't know. I mean, Montgomery hasn't really shown to be a coach who's – he had one winning record in conference play in 9 full seasons.
Yeah, I think it was, 15 – that was 2015, 2016, and
– No, it was actually his last full season.
Okay.
They finished tied for first in the West. Awesome. Yeah. 11-7. all the top teams were in the East.
You know what? I mean, look at the Horizon League over the last 2 years. Good Lord. 11-7 can get you, like, top four in the conference. That gets you a bye, at least.
But it also gets you a 9 seed.
I mean, it does, too. I mean, because Horizon is going to be tied. I know. Yeah, that's true. But they would at least be in the conversation. They would at least be in the mix.
My thing is that
like everybody else is now. And they wouldn't be a drag on the conference.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a lot better. I just don't, if you're a Detroit Mercy person, it's a little bit uninspiring because you're going to be fighting. It seems like you're going to be fighting for 500, except that Detroit Mercy within the Horizon League is a better job than Northern Illinois.
Yeah, I can't really argue that point.
Go better because relative to the other teams, you're in a better spot. But I don't know.
I can understand the argument about this being kind of a blah hire, but I mean, if we're being honest, you know, maybe that's what you need. I mean, really, maybe after this terrible, awful, no good season, maybe a guy who can maybe not bring, you know, catapult you back to the top, at least get you back to respectability. At least,
yeah,
you definitely need that. That's for sure.
Yeah, I just feel like in the portal era, the guy before the guy becomes a little bit less of a necessary thing.
Yeah, that's true. That is true indeed. So,
I mean, we've seen it the last 2 years where a new hire immediately finished. I mean, tied for second last 2 years of 2023 and then third place 2024. So,
yeah, exactly.
A hire who gets the right players in.
And again, those were two different situations because with Robinson, as we talked about, he had the core. Sonny just started from the just. Said, screw it, I'm starting.
I got Lundy. Come on now.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Bart Lundy. My bad. Sorry. But no, Bart Lundy also a similar situation where he had to bring in nearly all of his own guys. He had a couple of holdovers, but most of the guys who were kind of impact, he had to bring in.
And that's one of the things that I think, is kind of an evolution. Both of these last two hires are an evolution in adapting to the portal versus, I mean, I think there's a pressure to, no, we need to get Detroit players. Like, we are still seeing that Bart Lundy's team is a bunch of North Carolina guys. Obviously,
well see what happens. Except for
John
Lovelace. One of their transfers.
John Lovelace.
But to your other point too, because I know that's been kind of a sticking point with quite a few Detroit Mercy fans about recruiting local, recruiting Detroit. I get it. And you got a guy who can do that. If we're being honest, you got a guy who can do that. The question is the same question you have every time this comes up. How will that effectively translate? How will recruiting local translate for you? How will that work for you?
And what we're seeing, I mean, most, so outside of NKU, where it's worked mm-hmm. very well, what you're seeing is a bunch of, Milwaukee last season, top player, obviously, a North Carolina guy from Lundy's previous ties. They're, top incoming player this year, actively committed to play for Lundy at Queens. The top player at Green Bay, a Wyoming guy where Wicks was the coach, top player at Cleveland State, an Iowa State guy where
you're only just further proving my theory that a Michigan State guy is going to end up on this roster.
I mean, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
I know where you're going with that, but yeah, I mean, and yes, yes, I think that would be an outstanding, that would be a good start. But the whole recruiting local thing is hilarious because I think the one team that recruits to Michigan, it doesn't matter anymore. It does matter. But the funny part is, even if you try to do that, the one Horizon League team that recruits to Michigan inexplicably better than anybody happens to be Cleveland State, and I haven't been able to figure that out for a year. It's true. They just got Tyler Spratt, who's like – he was like a – I think he was a McDonald's All-American nominee in Michigan, and he's going to play for Cleveland State next year. So, okay. I know. I need one of those. Cleveland State needs one of those guys, especially, even beyond the Daniel Robinson era, it seems like there's like a Michigan to Cleveland State pipeline that has never stopped in the last 20 years. I don't know how that happened. But yeah.
So, just a quick peek at like the guys on Michigan State. I will say there's a guy who is lowest on the team in minutes, and maybe he could be an option. The Steven Izzo kid, maybe he enters the portal to get more playing time.
Are we going to do the Calipari thing again?
No, probably not.
No, probably not. Although if we're being, it's weird because we tell you, Brad did show up a few games during that time. During the time that Montgomery was an assistant, if I'm not mistaken. That was a weird convergence, but it worked. But yeah. So I guess we got to start talking about this this D2 All-Star team that Paul Corsaro has put together at IUPUI.
Yeah. I am a big fan of hiring the D2 guys because then you can just go grab, a good chunk of your core.
Sure.
And bring them up. And that's very much what he's done.
Sure.
At some point, I think it gets a little too much. It gets to be a little too much. They're not all going to be hits. We've seen it in the league. We've seen a D2 All-American who was a fine player, but Rich Byrie is going to be going off to St. Thomas after, not being what.
Oh, but we haven't heard, but John, we haven't heard the last of Rockhurst yet because one of Byrie's teammates is now going to IUPUI, and that's Tamaris Brown.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where maybe it can work a little bit better with guards than with bigs to go up that level because you still have to be.
I do think he goes D1 to grab some bigs. I think that's going to be the case. But yeah, most of the guys he's brought in are, the basically a lot of the guys two UIndy guys for sure that I think are going to be contributors, specifically Jarvis Walker.
Yeah.
Has some D1 experience, obviously, with Purdue Fort Wayne. The Paul Zielinskis, I think he's also going to be a contributor. I do think Tamaris Brown, I think he's going to be in the guy. And I guess they brought in this kid, Alec Melender, and he's from Wayne State, but not the Wayne State you're thinking of, John. the Wayne State in Nebraska that coincidentally was where Chris Kilsmeyer was coaching the women's team before he went to Wayne State. I'm not kidding. Same place. Yeah. I got to make that reference, and I never get to make those references. So those are kind of yeah, but I do think at some point in time, yes, at some point in time, we're going to get to a point where we will see a couple of D1 transfers coming in. I do see landing all the top guys
on different D2 schools. I think I will say one of the nice things is a lot of the guys he's getting are young.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And there is definitely the potential for that transition from year one to year two or year two to year three to be quite good and to, you know, really allow you to be a much, much better player than, you know, what you've put on the court as you get more used to that level.
Yeah, exactly. And I suspect that will be the case. I expect that to be the case here. And yeah, again, he's not done yet. They still have 6 scholarship spots left. I think I count that. They still have 6 left, so there's some possibilities there.
And I know they did grab a kid who was a high volume 3-point shooter. Took, you know, 2/3 of his 3-pointers from, or 2/3 of his shots from 3. Was that a okay D2 team? Thomas Moore. It is
Nathan Dedukovic. That's who.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, high volume 3-point shooter, shot over 35%. They definitely need that.
Oh, you think? Why? What happened last season?
Well, if they got down by more than 2 possessions, it was just over because they could not shoot their way back in.
Yeah, true. So I guess we'll see what's coming out. Speaking of transfer portal, you probably saw that just out of left field, Trey Townsend hit the portal. It's like the only
the
people
guy who was honored at senior day.
Yeah.
I mean,
that wasn't really a surprise to anybody. We've been waiting for that ever since Oakland was out of the tournament. So yeah, it's not a surprise.
Just saying, my understanding is that New Mexico has the largest NIL in the Mountain West. Just throwing that out there.
I'm still holding out for him and BJ, and though Kentucky is trying to hit BJ hard. As far as the BJ Freeman, they want him. Like Big Blue Nation wants BJ Freeman, but I'm still holding out hope that Trey and Marquez and BJ Freeman all end up and we get a mid-major all-star team part 2 at Mizzou.
At Mizzou, yeah. No,
and Lord knows Dennis Gates needs those guys.
Yeah. Need some wins next year.
So yes, that is that. I guess we got to close out to talk about whatever the heck is going on at Northern Kentucky. Not the men's team. Men's team seems to be okay. It seems to be the women's team that seems to be having some problems.
And yeah, it was a lot of.
Was this Groundhog Day?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, because back then they were winning, so they didn't fire her for it, and now they're losing. So a lot of very similar allegations of just. You know, not acting appropriately pop up.
Cameron Bowles is no longer the women's head coach at Northern Kentucky. It's weird because as of this recording, the good folks at Northern Kentucky have not put out a release yet, unless I missed it. But basically the local media has pretty much been all over this. Joe Dannemann over at Fox 19, he posted a story that included the report of the investigation that apparently has been going on for about 4 weeks that we didn't know about. So I guess they've been – so the timeline is very weird. So apparently on March 5th, they got a report. that there was some stuff going down with Volz. March 13th, they gathered the masses. I could say, like, interviewed 20 people for this thing, Volz included. I guess the day after they put her on administrative leave, we didn't know about that part until, what, like, a week ago?
Yeah.
And then, like Friday night, we find out that, oh, yeah, by the way, she's not going to be – she didn't do anything wrong, but she's not going to be here anymore. And what's ironic is it's like they Fox 19 actually has Fox 19 in Cincinnati, Joe Dadiman, this is his story. Basically, it's like 9 pages of, holy crap, what is this all about? But it does conclude that there were no violations in university policy.
Yeah.
They made no, but they said there were no violations of university policies, but then turned around and said, okay, AD, do what you want to do here. that's a lengthy document to come to that conclusion, really.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? Like, I don't know. Like, some of the redactions. Honestly, some of the redactions were hilarious too. Like, dude, we know who you're talking about. We know who you're talking about. You know, we know where you're talking about.
Could be Denver.
Could be Denver.
Daytona. Oh, no, that's crazy.
It is a serious matter, but I mean,
yeah.
That's silly enough that I can't stop chuckling about it. That's bad. I'm going to hell. No, it's true. I'm
and it feels like after that first set of allegations came out a few years ago, they kind of swept it under the rug because they were winning and didn't care. And now they're not winning. And they they come up with a new set of allegations that, I mean, shocker, if you know, maybe there was some validity to those back then. They wanted to see if they could, you know, find the validity here just to get out of even having to, you know.
It just seems like silly to me. Like, okay, it just seems like, okay. You guys could have literally did all this. I don't know. It's if you wanted to get rid of her, just get rid of her. Jeez Louise. I mean, I get it. I mean, it's not the first time we've ever seen a coach, people accuse a coach of being an awful person before. Like, we see that all the time. It's college basketball.
Yeah.
And literally, there are many different pieces of evidence here that suggest that nobody does anything about it. Only when you're losing, of course. I don't know. I don't really have much. It's like, okay, I'm just basically, it is what it is. I mean, it was what it was. Cause this, again, this is, that's why I refer to Groundhog Day. Cause this is the same, because we, it's funny because I actually, went through some of our past episodes. This was actually the first episode we had when I put up the standalone site. So Horizon when I launched HorizonRoundtable.com and we moved over to Anchor for our to do all our podcasts. The first episode on that format, on that platform, on HorizonRoundtable.com was the episode where we actually had Sam Rosensteel, who was the editor-in-chief of the Northerner at the time, and we talked about not just because at that point in time Darren Horn got hired, but we had also talked about the first time this happened, because they're the ones who reported about it. Wow, what's old is new again. And that was 5 years ago, and it's 5 years now. Wow.
Yeah, no, and
wonder what's going to happen 5 years from now.
Well, I don't think they can fire her again.
No, they definitely can't.
I don't think that she'll be, you know, spouting off like that at Northern Kentucky 5 years from now.
That would be very unusual.
No.
I mean, stranger things have happened.
And I don't know, that whole thing just feels, it's a different, you know, different AD and everything, but that whole thing just feels so weird. It's almost like they did hold that in their back pocket to see if they could get into firing her, you know, when the results weren't there, rather than just doing the right thing.
Yeah, because it seems like this has been, this has been a conversation that's been going on for a couple, at the very least, for a couple weeks, again, that we didn't know about. Like, okay, that seems bad, but it's over now, I guess.
Yeah, some of the reactions coming out of it from, like, the likes and replies to Kyle.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people a lot closer were not surprised.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
But the Northern have gotten a lot of trouble for that one, didn't they?
I don't know what they got into, but that was, because it's funny because that was a joint report between with Sam Rosensteel and Sierra Newton, who's all over the place now. So, but anyway, but again, it's over now. So, move on to the next one, I suppose. Not the first time we'll ever. Not the worst time we're gonna. Not the worst. Not the first time we've seen this, and it's not gonna be the last. It'll never be the last. All right, so. That's gonna kind of wrap it up for us, John. Next week, next episode, we got Langston Wilson on. We're gonna be talking to him. I know. No, we get to talk to him about, because he was in Phoenix for the dunk contest. We got to talk to him about that. Apparently, I know. Talk to him about his time in Milwaukee. Maybe a little talk a little bit about some of his earlier days. Talk about what he's going to be doing moving forward. Eventually, we'll talk to coaches. I had the stupid idea of trying to schedule stuff with coaches this week. That was tough because everybody's in Phoenix. As far as I know, everybody's in Phoenix. But yeah, that was dumb of me. But I'm gonna give it another whack, and I'm gonna try to get all these guys on because we got like four guys we got to talk to.
All right, let me hit up Matt. We'll hop up in the car. We'll be there in like 8 hours.
Yeah. Okay. So we got Corsaro, Clint Sargent over at Wright State, Ethan Faulkner, and yes, Mark Montgomery. We're gonna try to lock all those guys down. And by the way, if there's any other coaches you want to talk to, like over the course of the next month and a half, because I'm like going to do like a Coachapalooza thing where I'm just going to like all the episodes are going to be like talking to coaches, because, you know, I don't think anything earth shaking is going to go on other than that. But you never know.
Yeah.
All right. So until next week when we talk to Langston Wilson, obviously decidedly not coach, but definitely an interesting person to talk to. HorizonRoundtable.com, that is where you're going to find us, all our podcast episodes, all our articles. You can pull us up wherever podcasts are found, and you can pull us up on your Amazon or Google devices. So until next week when we talk to Langston Wilson, thank you for listening.